Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. What you're about to listen to is a set of questions that I got from a lady, an American lady named Nancy Hitt. She and Monica Schaefer appear on a radio show called Blood River Radio. And she wanted to know about LGBTQ. So this is the recording that I made for them regarding the role of the Jews and LGBTQ. And I especially want to point to things like, if you look on the screen, the cover of this particular book, The Unpopular War. One particular thing that concerned me about South Africa that I noticed in my time in South Africa was when I first came to South Africa and I spent a short time in the military, I actually noticed that the young white guys who were with me in the military, the young Afrikaans guys, were very patriotic and they were keen to kind of get stuck into the enemy. Most of them had good morale. They wanted to fight for their country. They didn't have a problem with their country and what they were fighting for. I spent all my time in the military, actually in Pretoria, in various buildings and later in the naval headquarters. And I was kind of trying to find my feet in life. I was just 17 years old. So for me, everything was totally new and strange, and I was very much out of my depth. But as the years went by, and I left the military after about 13 months, and I got into computers, and I moved around South Africa, I noticed the cultural changes when going from Pretoria, which is the capital city, to going to Johannesburg, which is like going to New York. And little did I know that this is where all this Jewish, liberal, globalist garbage is. And I noticed liberalism more and more. Even in the military, there was already some exposure to liberalism. There was a Jew in South Africa. He died a few years ago. And he ran a radio station that he owned. And he ran probably one of the first truly liberal, multiracial types of radio stations in South Africa. At that time, it wasn't multiracial, but he was already busy with his Jew propaganda. His name was John Burks. And back then, I didn't even know or think about Jews as some kind of evil thing, because there were Jews in Rhodesia, Jews in South Africa, and we thought these Jews were good people. So Burks, his real name is Berkowitz. And so little do I realize that this John Burks is a Jew talking his Jew crap on his own radio station. And it still runs to this day in South Africa. He's dead now. And later he even admitted that at school he was an idiot. That he was a fool. He was actually useless academically. And yet here were lots and lots of people. I think he had an audience of at least 1 million people. And we're actually listening to a Jew who is not just talking his Jew crap, but he's actually an idiot. He's actually a fool. But you see, that's the whole thing about Jews, is if you don't know that you're dealing with somebody who's busy engaging in deception, you just take it at face value. And I noticed as time went by how they beat down the morale of the whites, especially the Afrikaners. Jews were nibbling away in the newspapers, all the English newspapers owned by the Jewish Oppenheimers, who are basically the agents for the Rothschilds here in South Africa. The Oppenheimers literally own South Africa. Literally. They literally own the country. They owned at least 70% of the entire economy. Unbeknown to me until recent times when I woke up to the Jew issue is that all the English-speaking newspapers were owned indirectly in one way or another by these Oppenheimers. So all the English mass media is under Jewish liberal influence. Then you've still got a radio show like this radio network that John Birx had, and he's busy pumping away from the radio angle. And then you got a bunch of Jews led by the Jewess Helen Suzman in Parliament. She's busy with liberalism in Parliament, busy nibbling away at the whites over there, bringing down their morale, etc. And so you get this thing where as time goes by, the whites, especially the Afrikaans people, start to begin feeling guilty and beginning to wonder if they're doing the wrong thing. And it's simply Jews just talking their Jew shit, carrying on with their Jewish crap, and eventually they break down your morale. And so you can see there's a book there called The Unpopular War. So then the Jews go and they find everyone who's got something to gripe about, and they toss it into a book, and then they put that out and they write about it. And so all English books, probably 90% of all English books that come out of South Africa is probably Jewish, I must tell you. I've been in bookstores and looked at lots and lots of old books from South Africa, and I must tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if 80 or 90%, even 90% of all English books from South Africa were either written by Jews or edited by Jews or published by Jews. The real whites of South Africa, the Afrikaners, they would publish all their stuff in Afrikaans. And so people outside the country don't get to see that, sadly. But these Jews are busy working to break down your spirit, break down your morale, and eventually doubt yourself, even though you are right all along. So anyway, here is the audio that I made for Nancy and Monica, which they used on Blood River Radio, and then they commented about it. And if you want to find the link to it, just go to Monica Schaefer's website. She did publish a link and a story about this audio, and you can get the whole thing. It's about 2 hours long. And it is on her website with links to Blood River Radio. Hi there, Nancy and Monica. I just want to go through the questions and things that you asked and just quickly give you a reply as best I can. You write here, Monica has suggested that we discuss on Blood River Radio the influence of LGBT whatever on current South African policies. You may recall that I lived in Witbank for a short period in the 1970s and found that South Africa was a very conservative land, which at the time did not allow any girly magazines such as Playboy to be sold. I'm sure things have changed, and perhaps you can enlighten us so that we could be more informed on our Saturday evening broadcast. And then Monica said, somewhere I recently heard or read that this LGBTQ stuff was pushed in South Africa even before here, and that this stuff was pushed on the population to soften them up before the all-out war on whites went into high gear. They were making the point that the level of war and conditions of life for whites in South Africa will soon follow here, evidenced by the insane pushing of the LGBTQ agenda here now. In other words, the sequence of events are the same, only a bit later. Does this make sense? I have now lived in South Africa since 1981, so I can only speak from my experiences of the last 40 years. But you must understand that the war on the whites of South Africa has been going on for longer, and the war on the whites in Southern Africa is at least 50 to 60 years old. So there are things that could have happened in the times when I wasn't here. Or it's possible that there are things that I just didn't run into. When I see the LGBTQ stuff and transgender stuff in America, it is nothing like anything that I've seen in Southern Africa. The first time I ran into gays, the first time I actually came across gay males, was actually when I came to South Africa and I was in the South African Navy for a short while. I spent about 13 months in the South African Navy, and I was in Pretoria in various buildings, and it was there that was the first time that I actually came across gay males. Was actually one or two of them in the military, and they were called up and they were gay. In the one case, it was a guy who was an actor from Johannesburg and he was secretly gay. But there was another guy that I came across who was openly gay, and all the other guys knew it, and they even joked about it, and they mocked him and he laughed, and it was like that. It was just not a big deal, even among those Afrikaans guys. But the actor that I knew, he actually was someone I befriended because he spoke English and there weren't many people that I could speak English to. So I befriended this actor and he turned out to be a very weird guy. And he'd actually acted at some kind of famous places here in Johannesburg. And he told me all kinds of strange things. And now that I look back on these things, I look at it as Jewish and liberal influences on art. The creepy Jewish influences on art, on music, and on acting. And there's a whole culture in Johannesburg among these actor types and musicians that's very weird and it's very Jewy and it's really creepy. It's not normal white stuff. It's much more like your Hollywood and those things. And those people are weird. And for me, coming from Rhodesia, was something very bizarre that I'd never come across before. And later on, I even found out more about this actor because the actor had tried to commit suicide, and I'd seen the cuts on his wrists where he tried to cut his wrists and kill himself. And later, due to my position, I actually managed to get hold of his personal files, and I read his personal files, and then in there I discovered that he's gay and he's got all kinds of issues. And his gayness and suicide and all that was kind of linked. But Johannesburg has got a very different culture to the rest of South Africa, because Johannesburg is where Jews and the English and the money is. Whereas if you go to Pretoria or Witbank, like where Nancy was, go to Pretoria or Witbank, then you're in an Afrikaans culture, and they are different. They are very different. And you could say that the Afrikaners are like the Germans or the Europeans of South Africa. They are very different to the English and to the weirdo Jews. But the Jews are very close and deeply ingrained among the English. And the English are also more into business. So the Afrikaners are conservative and they are Christian and they have got very fixed kind of values. And they were running the country and directing most of South Africa's policies. But one thing that I've kind of realized about South Africa from my time here, as well as from history that I have been studying and refreshing up on, is that you always have this Jewish influence that's been sitting behind the whites, and it's been here in a big way from about the 1940s. from about the late 1940s onwards. The Jews started getting into politics and the Jews started making moves on the way South Africa is. Jews were busy with communism in South Africa in the 1920s already. They were doing communism in South Africa, but the communism was to turn whites into communists. But later they started going to the blacks and turning the blacks into communists. And then later, when the Afrikaners took control of South Africa, the Jews worked against apartheid, because apartheid was a creation of the Afrikaners. So Jewish influence grows, and as the Jews get stronger, they start working behind the scenes, and they're working against the Afrikaners. They're working in the opposite direction to them. So among the things that I found was that there are lots of books, for example. Most of the English books about South Africa are either outrightly Jewish or linked to weak English liberals who are infested with the Jews. And you'll find that all the anti-white propaganda, all the liberal anti-white propaganda from South Africa, and there's tons of it, comes with this either outright Jewish origin or Jewish tinged stuff. You must remember that the Afrikaners back then in the 70s and 60s and even well into the 80s and 90s, the Afrikaners were deep Christians and they truly believed in their Christianity. So they took their values very seriously. There is also the organization known as the Broederbond, which I've been refreshing my memory on. And no discussion of South Africa, especially of the Afrikaners and the whites, is complete without a good grasp of the Broederbond. But the Broederbond is the secret society that rules the white Afrikaners. It is a secret society, and it is the thing that drives them. It's the most powerful force among them, and it's still around to this day. It is composed of lots of intellectuals, among them lots of teachers, university lecturers, but lots and lots of teachers, and also university lecturers and professors. And then there are also some farmers who were in the Broederbond. The Broederbond still exists and it still functions, but as always, it's totally secretive. So there are lots of things that one can only speculate on. But they're still around and they've got lots of financial power. But in the past, they used to control everything. However, they still have financial power. Now, they went and started the move towards liberalism from about 1986 onwards. They kind of reached the conclusion that the whites of South Africa aren't going to be able to retain control of South Africa. And they actually kicked off the process of the move towards black rule. From what I would say of the whites in general and the Afrikaners is that I don't see that gays are such a huge thing. But I do know that in the Afrikaans community there are quite a few gays. But I wouldn't say that it's anything like the way that it is dealt with in America, etc. Nor have I seen that the gays have got lots of power. I haven't seen that. One thing I did run into when I had Jewish friends was I came across white gays who are wealthy and linked to Jews, and they are wealthy. And I noticed that in the business world, which is a Jewish-English world, that in that world, gays, all gay males, white gay males, are promoted big time and they are moved upwards. But that doesn't mean that that is true for all other things. I've not seen that elsewhere. The whites, especially the Afrikaners, are still people who have more militaristic types of values. They hunt, they like sport, like rugby. They are much more manly, and their culture is competitive and pretty much like the American male culture. The Jews are always pushing their propaganda that runs totally counter to the way the normal whites think. And the more I look at history and all white nations, Jews are always pressing and pushing whites in the opposite direction to their natural tendencies. There is an Afrikaans academic that I've spoken to who also understands race and racial history and European history. And that academic told me an interesting thing. He said to me that all Germanic whites, Germanic being a language construct, he said to me that going back into ancient times, all Germanic whites have got an apartheid component to them. They all insist on a type of apartheid. It is natural for the Germanics to think in that way. So in other words, the whites of South Africa are just normal Germanics in their way of thinking about things like apartheid. I myself have done some studies into apartheid as a white concept, and apartheid goes back to the Aryans who conquered India, and there's also apartheid of Romans and Greeks in ancient Egypt. There have been many kinds of apartheid that have been created by whites, even, let's call it, the southern European whites, the Romans and the Greeks, at various times had their form of apartheid. But when you're looking at Jews, you are looking at Jews moving around in a society. And when I look at what Jews did in South African society as they were moving around among whites, the Jews also befriended the blacks and worked on the blacks to turn the blacks against the whites and to make the blacks violent towards whites. That's very much a Jewish thing. I strongly suspect that the weaponizing of blacks and the turning of blacks towards violence against whites is a Jewish construct. It's very much a Jewish construct. I've picked this up from many different angles when I look into the past. But then the Jews also befriend the English, and they also try to find allies among the Afrikaners. And I've come to the conclusion that the Jews basically hunt for the misfits of society. They find all kinds of weirdos, weaklings, and misfits in society in all shapes and forms. And they drag them into their Jewy world, and they embrace them, and they empower them, and they use them against other whites. So in that sense, when you see things like anti-apartheid heroes, if you look more closely at them, they are basically white misfits, degenerates, and outright weaklings and cowards even, and fools who were sucked into the Jewish world, and then the Jews empower them and give them a lot of publicity. And in so doing, the Jews also hide the fact that this is a Jewish project. Because then you start seeing all these white non-Jews who are prominent. And there are even a couple of idiotic Afrikaners who fall for the Jewish nonsense. And there are even some idiotic Afrikaners who then break away from their own people. And they become liberals and communists. And there are some of them that are out and about and very famous to this day. They are the degenerates and the fools of the Afrikaners who bought into Jewish crap. But when you see South Africa and you see English, English is not just the English from Britain, it is massively a Jewish influence. And another thing that I saw with regard to breaking down the whites, Jews went to great lengths over long periods of time on multiple fronts to break the whites, especially the Afrikaners. So what they did was, they did communism in some cases, but then a huge chunk of the, quotes, good Jews then did liberal stuff, and they were pumping out tons and tons of liberal stuff and using liberalism to work away and undermine the Afrikaners and to undermine their morale and to break them down. But where I saw the most interesting stuff that I think was negative was the way that they chipped away at the morale of the Afrikaners when the Afrikaners wanted to fight. These liberals and Jews and these powerful Jewish English newspapers that are controlled indirectly by the Jewish Oppenheimers who literally own the country and are the local representatives of the Rothschilds, they worked long and hard to chip away at the desire and determination of the white Afrikaners to fight for South Africa, to fight the blacks, to go to war and to defend the country. The Afrikaners had a very natural desire to defend their society, to see an enemy and to want to smash that enemy. But these white liberals, directed and controlled by these Jews, did all kinds of things to break down the morale of the whites. And there are books that they wrote, like there's a book called The Unpopular War. And if you look at these things, it's just Jewish chipping away, whining and crying, and just breaking down the morale of a healthy people who would otherwise pick up weapons and go and defend themselves and defend their nation. So Jewish influence on the whites and on breaking them down and on using things inside the country as well as their links to outside the country. You know, Jews also dragged in other Jews from America and other white communists from England and so forth. And they brought all these enemies into South Africa and helped them so that they could go and write nasty stories and tell nasty things about the whites. The Jews of South Africa, in my mind, unquestionably knifed the Afrikaans people in the back in the same way that they knifed the Germans in the back in World War I. They knifed the whites in the back, but they were subtle about it, and they did it over a long period of time, and the local whites never really saw them as an enemy. Though the state at times would identify specific Jews as dangerous and would even try to kill some of them. Like, for example, the Jew Joe Slovo, whose wife was killed in a bomb that was meant for him. And there is another Jewish judge, I forget his name now, he also suffered damage from a bomb that was intended to kill him. So the Afrikaans whites only went after the most militant communist Jews and white liberals that they saw as instrumental that they needed to kill. But otherwise, the rest of the Jews, they just regarded them as good citizens. But they didn't grasp that the Jew is busy undermining the morale of the people. So it's not so much sexual stuff, but there's lots of things. Another place where Jews undermined the morality of the whites was in the case of things like Sun City. Sun City is a South African Las Vegas. And it was actually a Las Vegas that was illegal inside South Africa. But because of apartheid and there being some black homelands that were independent and had their own constitution, you then had a Jew like Saul Kersner going to that place. One of them was called Bophuthatswana, Tswana. And he went to Bophuthatswana, Tswana, and he set up a Las Vegas in Bophuthatswana, Tswana. So he had all the naughty sexual stuff, naughty gambling stuff, all the stuff that whites were not allowed to do in South Africa. Gambling was illegal, I think, in South Africa under apartheid. And all this other girly stuff was not allowed. So the Jew sets up the Las Vegas across the border in a black state, and then the whites end up, large numbers of whites, including these Christian whites, they eventually start going to Sun City for weekends and for holidays. And the vast majority of whites went to Sun City, the local Las Vegas, that was illegal in apartheid South Africa, but the Jew had set up his thing across the border. So, you know, the Jews have got many ways of just overcoming and breaking the rules. And they do that. Sun City exists to this day, but in the time of apartheid, it was a big attraction. And the whites eventually accept it, and then they say, oh, well, it's just capitalism, and we're against communism. So these Jews are always busy working away and changing the whites. And it's the same stuff they've been doing in America. So I think that's the best way that I can describe it. The blacks themselves are not into LGBTQ, but I think that they've been forced by Jewry and international globalists to openly say that they are for that. But I must tell you, deep down, blacks aren't really into that. Blacks in Africa may have their problems, but one thing they are very clear about, and that is that sex is between a male and a female. That is a very clear understanding that all blacks have. And they view any other kind of sex as degenerate. And there are even black leaders, even communists like Mugabe, who said that being gay is the next step after being gay is to have sex with animals, pigs and dogs. Robert Mugabe said that. He said, the next step after gays is sex with pigs and dogs. He openly said that. And lots of blacks in Africa don't like gays, and they view it as creepy. They don't like gays. They don't like lesbians. The blacks, even in South Africa, have been known to gang rape lesbians. They go and gang rape them, and they call it corrective sex, because they view it as the fact that the woman doesn't know about sex, that's why she's a lesbian, and they're going to teach her what sex is. And in further north parts of Africa, they kill gays. They regard it as weird and creepy. So in Africa, the LGBTQ thing doesn't really fly. What very few people know is that a neighboring state, Botswana, which is a big ally of America, and which used to be a British colony, that Botswana's president is a gay. He went to schools in Britain, and there's a lot of gay nonsense in Britain and weirdo Jewy influence there. And I've had people tell me that they think that the president of Botswana, you know, may have become gay through his schooling in England. There's an American preacher who also talks about the Jews. His name is Stephen something. I forget his name now. And he's done a thing about of the Jews and their lies. Anyway, he came to Botswana to come and minister to the blacks in Botswana. And among his ministry stuff was he was telling them that being gay is evil. And he and his people ended up being thrown out of the country. And he couldn't understand it, but what he doesn't know is that in Botswana, it is known off the record that the president is gay. And so here's this Christian American, and he comes and he talks about all the evilness of gays, and these blacks are listening, but the president is a gay. But there's a lot of British and American influence there in that family that rules Botswana, so that may be where this gayness comes from. And that's the only gayness that I really know of in Africa. But among the common blacks, I can tell you, gay and LGBTQ and all that doesn't make sense to them. But because the government tells them it's the right thing, they sort of say yes, but I don't think they take it very seriously. It flies very much against their natural instincts. So that's about as good as I can sort of summarize that issue. I hope that it gives you a little bit of guidance. But the real issue of South Africa is the breaking down of the Afrikaners. The Afrikaners were the ones holding the European values, etc. Nowadays, there's a lot of depression among these people. And one of the things that has gone backwards big time for the Afrikaners has been Christianity. There are lots of them that turned away from the church. There are many who turned away from the church but who remained Christian in their own way. But there are even small numbers of them who've become atheists. Atheism is something unknown to them, but I've come across actual atheists. The church was linked in a big way to the Broederbond. The Broederbond was Calvinist Christian, and the Broederbond saw Christianity as a very critical thing. And so, after black rule, a lot of the Afrikaans church collapsed. But lots of people, the majority of whites, stopped going to church, but they are still Christian. But like I say, a small portion have even become atheist. So there are many changes that have taken place among the Afrikaners. And then there are now liberal influences. The Broederbond may have become liberal. But I think deep down, the Broederbond is still ultimately an Afrikaner organization looking to protect the Afrikaners. I still think that that thing still exists. Definitely, it's still there. And the Afrikaners do stick together. They've got a closed culture, and the advantage they have is their language, and they use it to great effect. The only negative is that they don't really talk outside their culture. That I see as a negative, and that's why I do lots of English stuff, because there's good stuff among the Afrikaners, but they don't tell it outside of their communities. They hide their real feelings, but they are still very much there, and they are not as stupid or as weak as you might think. They are still there. They're very much a real force. They are still there. They're just silent, but they are still there, and they've not given up. So that's the best little summary I can give you. I hope that it gives you some things to ponder. But the white Afrikaners, the core of white South Africa is the white Afrikaner. And the white Afrikaner is going to be the determining factor in any future white moves in South Africa. If the Afrikaners decide to do something, then it will get done. And if they decide not to do something, then nobody else will do it. They are the Germans of South Africa. Whatever they decide, that's what will happen. And don't imagine that they are just going to abandon South Africa. they still look back on the Boer republics and they still have got designs for themselves in this piece of territory in southern Africa. And in that respect, they must be supported. All whites must support them because they are not finished and we've not reached the end of history of South Africa. The last chapter has not been written. The blacks and the Jews may think that they've won, but they haven't won. And the last chapter has not been written.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.